Welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal, and every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about the ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring how to create content that earns links all on its own. It's kind of the holy grail of our industry. Joining me for the conversation is the super smart Monique Quarles, who's a digital PR specialist at Wiedemann Consulting Group. Welcome to the show, Monique.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I just love that intro.
Thanks. I've said it so many times at this point.
I'm flattered. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. I'm really glad you're on the show. And I love this topic. I'm kind of surprised we haven't talked about it yet. I think it's something that literally everyone wants to be able to do. So these tips are going to be extremely helpful, I would imagine. So let's talk about just content that builds links on its own. How difficult is this in your eyes? Because I feel like this is one of the hardest things to do.
You know what? Honestly, with the right team and with the right amount of research, I feel like it can be done. I don't want to say that it's too hard, but with the right direction and with the right focus, it can definitely be done.
Yeah, I think that point about a team is a good one. Sometimes I talk to a lot of people who are kind of like a one-person show, and it can be really difficult sometimes, right? Like to sit there, do all the research, create it all. It's tough. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely possible. So when you have this goal of, okay, I'm going to create a piece of content with the goal of creating links, what is your first step right out of the gate? What is the first thing you do?
So typically the first step, right, like when it comes to like working with our content team, so at least upon my side, since I do the digital PR, a big part of my role is link building. So in coming up with concepts and coming up with topics, I partner with the content team, whether that be in-house or whether that be with one of our clients. And we try to find a balance. We try to find, you know, a balance between what we're good at and what people are talking about, number one. And then we want to do our research. We want to make sure that we're talking about something that's relevant, something that people are seeking answers for. I use a lot of tools such as SEMrush, Google Trends, and Answer the Public to be able to see what questions people are asking around a specific area of expertise. And from there, we kind of collaborate on how we want to structure the content, because even though, like, most of the time, like for me, I'm not writing the content, but before it's even written, I try to give them like my perspective from a digital PR perspective, just like when it comes to link building and how I see myself doing the outreach. So that way, when they actually write it, we're writing it from an angle that makes it easier to share with other people.
I am so glad you brought that up. We do the same thing where we have people on the promotion side involved the whole time. And it makes a huge difference than creating something in a vacuum. Even if you do the research and you create something, to not have that perspective of what could the headline be for this? Or like, what are the main takeaways that are going to be interesting to people? That's so important.
It is. Like, and even outside of work, you know, I mean, I'm heavily involved just in like social media and especially Twitter, and just seeing what people are talking about and how they're talking about it and how they're responding. So a lot of that, you know, whether it be like personal, professional, I like to bring that into the conversation and say, hey, you know, I think that this might be a better way that we can approach this topic. So just like that way, there's not a lot of rewriting. It's not a lot of, you know, us doing all of this work and then putting it out there and it's not getting the attention that it deserves.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Do you find that there's a certain breakdown of timely pieces versus evergreen in terms of what's more successful for link building? I know that timely stuff tends to get more links up front and then kind of fades, whereas evergreen stuff, maybe it's a little slower but lasts longer. Like, what has been your experience with that?
Yeah, so actually it's a little bit of both. So with timely content, I feel like it has been worked ideal for us recently, especially with it being COVID, one of the examples that comes to mind just as far as timely content is a piece, a page that we built out around this time last year with one of our clients, VidCruiter, who is a video interviewing platform. And we built out a page called How to Ace Your Video Interview. And of course, you know, we know that virtual interviewing has always been around, but we built this page out at a time where it was really the only option. Like all you could do was, you know, do a video interview because we were on lockdown. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were searching for answers on how to do well with video interviewing. They were asking questions just about best practices. So we built out a page that included data and statistics about things such as communication methods and body language. And we also included kind of that technical aspect too. We also included jump links for easy navigation because this piece was a bit comprehensive. And then we also included visual examples of like good and bad lighting, good and bad angles, and good and bad eye contact. And then we also included quotes from experts within the recruiting space, such as the founder from Career Sidekick. And we also included a downloadable infographic. And so with this content, because number one, it was very comprehensive, that it included a lot of visual elements, and it would kind of serve as a one-stop shop, it ended up getting over 100 links on its own. And a lot of them were EDU links. Most of them were actually EDUs from like college career centers, which was really, really cool. And so this piece, we didn't really have to do any outreach for it. So this piece, you know, kind of serves as an example of something that is timely. And I feel like when you have that timely content, especially in a climate such as this, of course we couldn't foresee it, but coming like off of COVID and kind of taking that angle with this piece is really well for us.
That's a wonderful example in a lot of different ways. You seized that opportunity where there wasn't a guide that was comprehensive like that, right? So it just became almost, I mean, it was high quality as well, but the default thing to choose when it came to what you're going to link to, this answered the question in the best way, right? You mentioned visuals. Is that often an element of this content that you're creating? Like what have you seen different formats do better than others? I've heard a lot of people talk about how, oh, create like calculators and tools and things of that nature. They tend to get a lot of links. What have you seen in that regard?
Yeah, so there's different elements you can play around with. And I think depending on the industry that you're in, you know, some like your audience may respond, you know, to things better than maybe another format. But it's not just, you know, good enough to just write a simple answer. But of course, you want to add that visual element to it. One thing that I've seen that works really well is glossaries. So we had a client who was a personal injury lawyer. And his glossary, it always did well, just because people were constantly looking for definitions of words such as subpoena or affidavit or negligence. So things like that, I feel like has been really, really helpful just in creating not just writing just in context what the answer is, but also providing graphics, I feel has been really helpful. Checklists work really well too, because you're able to make them downloadable, something that people can have and they can print them out, maybe share them with their friends. Doing like video content, how-tos and tutorials. So I just kind of have learned like when it comes to content, it doesn't just have to necessarily be limited to just written, but the most visual answer that you can get, you can do it in different formats, which makes it easy for people to digest, because people really don't have time to go through pages and pages and scroll for days just to find an answer. So if you can do it in the most visual and most concise way, then by all means, like, do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you find that you're getting links to from really well created images? Because I know image search is a whole other strategy, right? Like outside of just the text, being able to rank for an infographic or a video. Do you see that be successful too?
You know what? I have seen infographics be successful just from an image standpoint. But when it comes to infographics, I think the best ones that typically get links are the ones that are rooted in data, which is a huge part of really mastering the art of great content. Because as I mentioned, like, there are many writers who are going through the internet trying to, you know, find a resource for whatever content that they're writing. So they're not trying to go through 100,000 articles just to try to find information. So any type of data that you can include, I've noticed just with infographics in particular, it has been really successful, I've seen, because it's easily shareable. People are constantly looking for statistics to quote. People are constantly looking for research. So, I mean, if you have the money to do the research and, you know, include that data, then by all means do it. Or if you even don't have the money, I mean, do the research and gather all these studies together and compile it into one place.
Yeah, that's a great point. I definitely learned that when I was writing my own pieces and looking for statistics, and I would type in, oh, content marketing stats or something, and saw these posts that compiled statistics from all these other places and realized that's why they were putting it together. Like, oh, this is really smart. They're just getting my link because they did all the hard work for me.
Right.
And you're absolutely right, though. Like, if you can do, there have been times where I've had a question and there wasn't a stat, and that's a great idea to move forward with from what you're going to create. Like, oh, this statistic doesn't exist. How can we do that research ourselves, right?
Exactly.
So let me ask you this. You create a piece of content like this, and if we're talking about naturally building links, how quickly do you expect that to start happening? Because we know that it doesn't happen very fast when you to start ranking for content. Mm-hmm. So what do you look for in terms of results, and when do you get a sense of whether it's working or not?
Oh, that's a really good question. So of course, like, you know, you mentioned the natural or editorial links. So typically for those, what I've seen, it can be as quick as 24 hours, and it can be as long as a few months. I think really it all depends on the topic. I think it all depends on the timeliness. And I think that it depends on the industry that you are in. So for example, with the content piece I was just telling you about for VidCruiter, I mean, the results were almost like instantaneous. But over time, it has continued just to build links on its own. So within a couple of weeks up to ongoing after a few months, it's done well. But then again, on the other side of it, you know, there are some content pieces that may not do as well as others. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. It's always good, of course, to have content that gets links on its own and gets links organically, because it makes our job easier. But when we start the manual outreach, typically, I would say I probably give it about like maybe a week or two until we start like bumping up our efforts when it comes to the manual outreach piece of it.
So what does some of that, I know this isn't the focus of the episode, but I think it is important to touch on because it can come up. And I assume sometimes you give the piece of content a little bit of a promotions boost just to get it going, and then it starts generating the links on its own. What does some of that PR effort look like on your end? What kind of tactics do you use?
For the for reaching out?
Yeah, like when you're, say in that case, you have a piece of content and it's been a couple of weeks and you're like, it's not really doing what we wanted it to do. What would your strategy be in that case?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of it sometimes it could be a matter of repurposing. So this is like where we kind of go back to the table with the content writer, because it could be a number of things. And we try to analyze it and see, OK, what is it about this piece of content that's not doing well? Like, and it could be technical, you know, aspects of it, or it could be the fact that maybe it's not as visual. Like an example I can think of right now, we're actually in the process of rewriting a piece of content. I wouldn't say rewrite. Writing it completely, but we're in the process of creating visuals for it, because it's really like about home improvement. And so there's a lot of steps that comes with it, but a lot of it is text-based. So we're kind of going back to the table and coming up with graphics. So really it's kind of going back and seeing exactly like, what is it about this piece? You know, like, is it just a matter of us maybe adding something extra to it that could just be, you know, one thing, or we can try to repurpose it and promote it on social media. That could be another thing too, that we do. Or we can kind of pitch it as a, possibly pitch a guest blog for other websites. So we try to go back and just try to get to the root of what we think that the issue is and try to work from there.
Yeah, and connecting with those other teams and bringing all those perspectives together again, kind of like you did at the beginning, right?
Right. So because sometimes it just doesn't, you know, get the traction that we're looking for. I mean, and it happens. Like, there are times like where we have released content and it just doesn't do, it doesn't move as quickly as we, you know, had anticipated that it would.
Yeah. I was on a sales call earlier today where we had this conversation. They were like, oh, I know it's impossible to guarantee links, but what does that look like? And it's accepting that there's, I'm making this percentage up, but at least 10% of a luck factor with this type of work. Like, you just don't have full control over it, right? We can't tell somebody to link to something or, you know, just predict what's going to happen. So it's important to have these. I love the suggestions you gave on how to look at something again and retool it and see how you can make it work in a different way if the first plan didn't go well.
Right. And that's really what it's about. I mean, honestly, marketing is a science. It's a matter of trying things and seeing what sticks. If it doesn't work, we kind of have to go back and, you know, redo it. It's that whole, it's going to take me back to school, my school days, coming up with a theory. Or is it a hypothesis?
Hypothesis, right. Yeah.
That's what marketing is, honestly.
Yeah. So much testing. God. So if we were to put a checklist together, someone's listening to this and they want to write down the key elements that every piece of content needs to increase the chances that it'll build links. I think we've covered some of them already. It sounds like potentially some different format types, maybe some images, video, whatever makes sense for the content. And right. That it's answering some kind of a question that you have researched, that there's a need for that information. What else might be on this checklist? Like, when you're looking at something, especially from the promotions perspective, what is on your own personal checklist? Like, okay, this content is ready to go.
For me, of course, adding that visual element of it and making sure that whatever it is, we're able to share it, right? Like, you always want to make sure that whatever piece that you do, it's shareable. And then also kind of going back to data, like, honestly, I feel like the best content that usually picks up and generates links are the ones that have data, like whether it's, you know, conducted by your own research, whether it's a matter of you compiling just a bunch of studies together and just putting it in one place. I always feel like always make sure that whatever content that you're pushing has some element of data, making sure that it has an element of visual component, and making sure too that that you also include an element of things like such as expert opinions, expert quotes, and making sure that you have, also making sure that you have like an easy way to navigate it, like, and you're doing it in such a way that's super, super concise.
Yeah, that's a really important point, just that it's actually readable and skimmable and accessible to people. So
yeah, because like 9 times out of 10 people are not going, I'm not gonna lie, like I honestly like usually try to go straight to my answer. Like, right. I probably won't read through like 80% of the stuff that's like on an actual page, like when I'm doing like my own Google searches. So it's really important just to make it as easy for the person and make it as like bold for them and making sure that the answer is right there in their face.
100%. Yeah. And you mentioned data, and I'm glad you did, because Fractal has a very similar philosophy in terms of if you come up with original information, it's much more likely to be linked to and talked about. What kind of data do you use? Are you talking internal data? Do you do surveys? Like, what are some of the methodologies there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it could definitely be surveys. Surveys are actually really, really important to do. Like I said, if you can afford to do your own research and form a focus group or conduct like just an online survey, like through SurveyMonkey, then by all means, like I feel like that is really, really helpful just in terms of creating your own data just around what people are talking about. But I typically find that surveys typically are the most helpful.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of traction with that too. How many respondents do you try to get?
You know, it all depends, like depending on the client, depending on what exactly that we're talking about. I feel like a safe number would always have to be at least anywhere between like 100 to 200 people. But I would say like 100, like on the minimum spectrum.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have any other examples you can share? You had that amazing one earlier, so I know I'm putting you on the spot to see if you can walk through maybe another idea that you or someone on the team had and why you, like coming from the PR perspective, were like, this is going to do great.
You know what? One that I will share with you, and this isn't something that our team did, but I actually did another podcast episode not too long ago with Will Hobson from Rise at 7, and he's a PR director. And he actually shared a fun example with me, and I only share this because I love Nicki Minaj. Anybody who knows me knows that I love her. So I don't know if you remember, but a few months ago, she posted a picture, and in her picture, she was wearing pink Crocs. And so the search for pink Crocs shot up by like 4,900.
Oh, wow.
And their team actually conducted that study for their client, and it picked up like so many links right away. And he used that as an example of just things that, one of the pieces that they've worked on that has garnered a lot of links. And I use that as an example just because I know you had asked earlier about natural links and things that happen to link very quickly. And so that is an example. I mean, Crocs are already an established brand. And then, of course, like Nicki Minaj is already a celebrity. So those are things that, of course, pick up within pop culture. So I find that to be a really, really fun example in terms of creating content that garners links right away.
Yeah, because it's filling a vacuum right as it happens is what it sounds right. Like there's this sweet spot of something becomes trending and then you have to act so fast in order to pull it off. Yeah, it's so, you really have to have a team, and I think that's also the thing people struggle with internally. It's having those resources and getting approval so fast, or even if you're working with clients, it's getting their approval. You know, we've run into that before, and when the client is willing to kind of go for it, they see the best results a lot of the time. They're like, yeah, put that together, let's see what happens.
Exactly. And, you know, and sometimes, like I said, depending on the industry, like you'll see quicker results, like within, especially if it's a pop culture type of topic. But on the other hand, I mean, like there are other industries like where you are going to have to like go out and actually do the outreach piece of it.
I know you said pop culture. Are there any other industries you feel like it has been easier than others?
Well,
ones that are particularly tough?
Yeah, I mean, I always find it because we do work with a few like national brands that are like multi-location, which I find it like easier to do with an easy recognizable name.
Yeah.
But I also find it easier like for home improvement companies, like home improvement or HVAC companies. I actually find it to be quite easy because homeowners are always looking for information on how to improve their home or trying to fix something. So one example is I find that we found success just like, for example, with the roofing company, finding what people are asking around that. So how much does it cost to replace a roof, or how long does a roof last, or will a roof replacement be covered by insurance? So answering questions like around certain topics such as that have proven to be successful in the content that we've done. So just making sure that we're staying on top of what is trending and what people are asking within a certain industry, I feel like has gotten us a lot of success. But I feel like with, I'm sorry, I know we're talking about home improvement or HVAC companies, I feel like those have, those typically do a lot better.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. It's those industries where there's a little bit more of a gap of knowledge where there are just going to be a lot of questions that people are constantly searching for, because why would I know how much a roof costs until I finally have to replace it, right? I just don't have any knowledge about that right now.
Right, right.
So what do you think are, I love asking this question. I've asked it in almost every episode, full disclosure. People who listen to the show are like, my God. Okay. What do you think are the biggest mistakes people are making when they're creating this type of content or promoting it?
I think one of the biggest mistakes is people not really understanding fully what people are talking about. And I think that, and I've seen this a lot just from a client standpoint, is because people are typically so immersed within their own business, right? Mm. And they want to tell you like everything that they're good about, like, you know, you should hire us because of this, we're good at that. And, you know, and that's fine, but it's just, you have to be able to find a balance and kind of take yourself out of your own bubble and be able to see what other people care about, like, what are their needs? What are their problems that they're facing right now in this moment? And I feel like when you neglect that, that's a huge mistake.
You mentioned some tools earlier in the show about how you're keeping up with things. I know keyword research, and I think you mentioned SEMrush and Answer the Public is great for questions. For trends, did you mention Google Trends? How else are you? Are you literally just like on Twitter, just, or wherever, whatever social media, Instagram, just getting a sense of what is popular? Do you have to just manually tune into all of that?
Yeah, so actually, like, from a professional standpoint, it's always those three tools. So it's usually SEMrush, Google Trends, or Answer the Public. But like from a personal standpoint, I'm usually on Twitter. And depending on what's going on, I feel like I kind of take that back to the forefront. So I know recently one of the topics that me and, like, of course my team had talked about was possibly talking about burnout, because that's one of the trending topics that is consistent on social media that people are talking about. So really being able to kind of connect the dots between what people are talking about and being able to find those answers like on Google Trends and Answer the Public, but also being able to kind of like, taking like what you're seeing on social media and then using that in as a way to say, okay, like, let me see what is in Google Trends or Answer the Public.
Yeah, it's at least the inspiration point to continue to pursue that topic.
Right. I'm sorry. That's what I was trying to say. Like, kind of using that as inspiration.
I love that approach. Mm-hmm. Anything else I forgot? Anything else you think is important that we haven't talked about today, or do we cover it all?
I think for the most part, we've covered it all. I would just say, like, the only other thing that we really like just didn't talk about was just the outreach piece of it. So the truth is, like, there are pieces of content that, you know, that you are going to have to do outreach for. And just like when you're when you do outreach, when it comes to promoting content, like, there are a few best practices just in making sure that you get responses. Because mm-hmm. really, honestly, like, you really have to have tough skin if you're going to be a link builder or do outreach, because most of the time people are going to tell you no, or they're going to ignore you right away. But I have found like several tips to be really helpful just from an outreach perspective is having a great subject line, having an intention grabber, maybe opening up with a joke, something that's going to actually get the person to open your email. And then also just being able just to be human and not, putting on your corporate voice or using corporate jargon when you're emailing editors, when you're emailing writers or website managers or marketing managers. So being able to build relationships and be approachable. And then also personalizing your approach, you know, like, let them know that you actually are familiar with their content. Let them know that, you know, that you're maybe like a fan of their work, and also be personal by using their name, because really in actuality, it's great to have awesome content that gets links, but especially like whenever you do outreach, you want to make sure that you're building a relationship with people. So that way, the next time that you're doing a content piece, or maybe next time they're looking for content, you guys can kind of come back to each other and see how you can collaborate in the future.
That was an excellent 2-minute summary. Well done. That was impressive. Yeah, I think everyone who listened today got a lot of really great advice. That was great. Monique, knowing the goal of the show, there's probably like going to be a little message we add to these podcast episodes, but I'm leaving the show because I'm leaving Fractal. but it's going to be taken over and it's going to keep going on. So who do you think should be guests on future episodes?
Oh my goodness. That is a very, very good question. I'm going to have to go with, I'm just going to name number one, Will Hobson, just because I did an interview with him and I think that he is a digital PR mastermind. And I just love everything that he's been doing over there at his agency. And also I would say anyone who was at the conference in Napa.
Yes, which is where we met everyone. That's where Monique yes. and I got to chat and sorted this all out and scheduled this. So yeah, what is it called now? It used to be the Advanced Search Summit, but now it's
oh, they changed the name?
Yeah, to like digital marketing, something, because they realized that the acronym was ASS.
Oh, that is so funny. You know what's funny? I didn't even realize that it was that.
Now I didn't either, but they mentioned it like literally at the event. They were like, oh yeah, we're changing the name of this conference because we can't keep calling it this. But I think it's the Digital Marketers Organization, for anyone who's listening. They have really cool events and conferences. And Monique and I went to the Napa one this year, and it was a lot of fun. But you're absolutely right. That is a great resource for reaching out and finding guests. So that's a great point.
Yes. I mean, I feel like I had the opportunity to meet you. I think that, you know, you're a brilliant mind in the digital marketing world. I mean, I had the chance to be a part of other people's sessions, and there were a lot of people who were very forward thinking, and it really opens up your mind. It was actually my first industry conference. So it was definitely a great experience just to be able to get that perspective outside of the office.
We need you speaking at these, Monique. You need to be giving the next presentations.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Listen, I feel like such a newbie. I feel like such a newbie in the digital marketing world. You never know. You might see me speaking at one of the industry conferences.
Hell yeah. I really hope so. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. It was really nice to catch up and to get your insights on this.
Absolutely. I definitely appreciate you having me. I think this was so much fun. I haven't had the opportunity to talk to you since we've been in Napa. So it's great to be able to reconnect with you on this level.
Yes, we'll have to do it again soon.
We will.
Awesome. If you've listened to this and you want even more tips, even though Monique just gave you a million, which make sure you write them down, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page of the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, tips on how to learn how to watercolor, that's my latest hobby, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. If this is recorded, if you're listening to this after September 7th and I'm not with Fractal anymore, reach out to anybody on the team. They're all happy to help you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for the logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.